Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, this is Gino Church, co-author of The Passion Conversation, and this is the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others, as one of the top marketing podcasts. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection in invite with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. All right, let's get on with the show. Today I'm joined by Gino Church, and we're going to talk about the book, The Passion Conversation, Understanding, Sparking, and Sustaining Word-of-Mouth Marketing, which he co-authored with his partners at the word-of-mouth agency, Brains on Fire, where he is the word-of-mouth inspiration officer. Gino is also a highly sought-after speaker and keynoter and is widely quoted in the news media. He has been to Disney World 35 times and counting. Gino, congratulations on the Passion Conversation and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you so much, Douglas. I thought you were going to congratulate me on the 35 times I've been to Disney.
Well, both. But Gino, you're presence on the Marketing Book Podcast marks a diversity milestone for the show. You are the first marketing book author with a Southern accent to appear on the show.
Well, that's an honor.
Yeah. Well,
thank you. Thank you.
And I noticed in your bio or in the book somewhere, you said that moonshine and bootlegging run on both sides of your family.
It does, and I actually didn't find out about that till probably about a year ago because my parents kept that from me. And then they just all of a sudden popped it up that, well, your uncle was a bootlegger and the other one was a maker. So yeah, it's I think if you have roots, you know, in the South, then you're probably going to find moonshine.
And why not play to those stereotypes? You know, and
I agree.
I'm a Southerner, and I should also note that we both wear bow ties.
We do.
And there's,
which are awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's required by law in the South. Yeah. So there's a picture of the two of us when I got to meet you recently, and I'm going to include that in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. So
awesome.
This just, you know, a lot of special meaning here. So before we get started on the book, I was wondering if you could tell the listener about Ernest Dichter, the Austrian.
Yes. Well, interesting how we kind of stumbled onto him is that John Moore, who is a co-author on The Passion Conversation and a co-partner here at Brains on Fire and also a very, very good friend, years ago when he was still a consultant, one of the things that we would banter back and forth was word-of-mouth marketing research and our biggest thing of why we bantered back and forth is how in the hell to understand it. It was such scientific. It was based on diagrams. And as a marketer, it left a lot of room for us to really misunderstand it and come up with a million uses not to start implementing it into our practice. And Ernest Dichter, however you can say it any number of ways. We stumbled on some research, started digging. He did some amazing motivational research that really a lot of people either totally believed in him or they thought he was a quack. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that we now are thankful for him for is he understood that women played a key role in the buying of automobiles, which at that time they did not. And so he was instrumental in marketing to women, which led to the idea of that wonderful clock that we have in a car. He thought, maybe people need to know what time it is as they're driving on the road. So he really dug in and understood people. And so he did a lot of motivational based research and marketing. A lot of people believed in it and some didn't, but we kind of fell in love. John and I fell in love with him, and we've been able to do a lot of talks about that, and we wove some of that into the book. That was inspiration. It led us down to finding the triggers of the motivational triggers as to why we talk and share on behalf of a brand or an organization. So he, Ernest, led that path.
So he wrote a Harvard Business Review article, it looks like in 1966.
Yep.
And he contended that if people perceived a brand as a friend, if the brand could project a voice to match, consumers would consider it to be more authentic and trusted. And it was really fascinating. And I, before we get further into the title of the book, Passions and Emotions, I wanted to talk about a few rational aspects of word-of-mouth marketing for all the left-brained Sure. listeners out there. A lot of marketers are very left-brained. And the book is more scientific than I think people will realize. There's a lot of research and psychology and science in this. And one of the things that it talks about is how, there's so many tidbits. One of them here talks about how McKinsey and Company determined that word of mouth is responsible for up to 50% of all purchase decisions, whereas advertising is only 22% of all conversations people have. And word of mouth conversations, 78% are sparked by something else.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more. Because I don't want people thinking this is like some squishy branding concept. This is really, there's a lot of meat on these bones here. The Keller Fay Group, who you referenced several times in the book, found that Americans will mention specific brand names about 60 times every week in conversation with others. And they also said 90% of all word of mouth conversations about brands happen offline.
Yeah.
And I think there's a common misperception that word of mouth, it's very much an online phenomenon, but it's really very much the opposite. So in the book, you talk about how you can't choose your advocates. They choose you. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. Yeah, there's a couple of points I want to kind of feed off of what you said, so hopefully I won't lose. Being Southern, we also kind of we like to storytell, go off on a tangent, so I apologize.
Yeah, just pretend we're sitting on the porch visiting.
You know the interesting thing in those numbers, we have these things where we go, well, we're always online. That can't be right. And then there's also a lot of crazy things, too, that back up to that is, so how do we measure that and how do we get an ROI? And I think that is a big struggle with word of mouth, that we've had a little bit of a difficulty to come up with those hardcore ROI things, because so much of word of mouth does happen face to face. I mean, all of the folks that are going to listen to this on the podcast, and Douglas, you and myself, think about how we learn things that we end up going to participate in, whether that's a restaurant, a movie, a place to go on vacation. We do read about it, and sometimes we'll read a review, and that's fine. But if we hear it directly from a person that we trust, and we're able to see their emotion in their eyes and how they tell a story about it, we're like, that jazzes us up. We're like, sign me up for that.
It's a stranger I don't know, and they're telling me about it, I don't think there's anything much more powerful unless I knew them.
Right. And so, here's something to keep in mind. And my wife and I, my wife is a very good online shopper. But it's real interesting because I'm in the business. She goes and she reads a product review. It's got 4.5 stars and there's about 80 reviews on Amazon. And she'll go, I'm thinking about this rice cooker. we'll look at this. But then there's this other one that's got 5-star reviews, but it's only got like 30. And I said, well, have you started reading all the reviews? And she said, yeah. She goes, you know, there's a couple of them that have said, I'm giving an honest review because I received the product to be able to get in kind, because so that I would give an honest review whether I liked it or not. And I said, well, I told her I scratched that product off, because that automatically tells me I want something a little bit more authentic. So, you know, we've done a great job of building tools where people can review stuff. And I use those reviews all the time, whether I'm looking at tires for my car, I'm looking at a hotel, a wide variety of things. But because I'm in the business, I know that there's ways that can be rigged a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I want to go and find out, do I know somebody else? Does somebody else know this? So, you know, I think those numbers are a good gut check for us that today, if we want to build a community, if we want to look at increasing the word of mouth for our brand and our organization, and by word of mouth, what you're wanting to do is connect people, form relationships with the people that support your brand, and that WOM is the mutually beneficial values that you both agree on that you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. So that's what we want to find. And so, you know, I think, you know, I hope that we get people to understand that's a game of balance. It has to be balanced with online and offline. So the reason to your question is you can't pick your advocates, they pick you, is that we started down this path of word of mouth marketing and community building back in the early 2000s. In 2002, 2003, we were hired by the state of South Carolina to develop a drug prevention program for teenagers. We led the nation in smoking. And at that time, you remember the truth stuff, the really cool stuff with the body bags and all the advertising that they did. They elevated to where all the kids looked like they came out of a rock, hip-hop band or an MTV show. They were just beautiful kids, and they were on trend. They were perfect. That's not the way kids come. Mm-hmm. Kids come with pocket protectors. They're not a cheerleader. They're not on the football team. They could be on the debate team, the science team. They could be part of a group that picks up litter or reads to the elderly. And so in the beginning, we tried to kind of be picture perfect and pick and choose our kids that would lead this movement. And we quickly realized the kids that actually had passion for it, had their heart for it, were the ones that we probably wouldn't have chose, because we were looking for something instead of setting the table for people to choose us. And the beauty and the magic is in that. And so I think, yes, you can lay out what you're looking for in specifics, but don't be surprised to find that your best advocates are going to be the ones that are going to surprise you, because you didn't think they would be. And so our lesson we learned from the days of rage with teens was not to judge a book by its cover. And that's just not about, boy, girl, race or anything like that. That's about, you know, are they a nerd? Are they, what's their lifestyle? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we believe they've got to be insanely popular.
Can you explain for the listener the connection between passion and word of mouth marketing, and how an understanding of that can make their word of mouth marketing better? In other words, passion is this thread that goes through the book, and it's also the title of the book. So can you explain what you mean by passion? Because I think it's a great touchstone,
sure,
to help people better understand how to effectively do this.
Passion itself is a little bit of a tricky word, and there's all kinds of levels of passion. I think at the root of passion, and we talk about this when I make presentations, and we talk a little bit about it in the book, but at the root of passion is that if you believe that something whether that's an organization that you give a donation to, if it's your car, if it's a restaurant, if it's a book, if you are passionate about it, you're going to pass it on to someone else because you believe they're going to find it of great value to them. And that passion is a kickstarter to WOM. We love something and we hate something. And that's the stuff that we talk about. The stuff that's in the middle that we don't have a passion for, we don't talk about. And what's amazing is that some very mundane things we can get really passionate about. If we can set the table for getting people to explore that meaning and then talk about how a scissor helps you to create a beautiful piece of art. And so you can become passionate about that scissor because what it enables you to do. And I think sometimes we get really caught up in marketing and in trying to get people to talk about us and forgetting that what people really want to talk about is themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's where that passion comes in, is that the goal of word of mouth is advocacy, creating a living messenger for your brand or your organization that is passionate so much that they're going to go out and evangelize about the idea, a product, a cause, your service. And so, you know, passion is a key element of that because if we want people to go out and talk on our behalf, whether that's online or offline, they need to, in a way, trust that when they recommend you, especially passionately recommend you, that it's not going to look bad on them. And I've had situations to where I've been treated really well by a brand. I'm a total evangelist for their product. And I'm sure you have too, Douglas, to where every now and then you're going to recommend it and that person is not going to have the same experience that you did. And then it dings you because you go, God, am I going to recommend that again? Well, they had a burnt pizza. They weren't offered the same deal that I was, mm-hmm. Whatever that may be. So, there's challenges in all that. So if you're a brand and organization, and our goal should be to make sure that our customers are passionate, that they're evangelists for us because it helps them do whatever it is they want to do in their life. They want to have a great vacation. I want to feel good driving my car. I want to be safe. I want to get great gas mileage, but I want to be able to take a turn fast, whatever that may be. We need to help them find out what that is that they want to be. And that's what they're going to share passionately about. Mm-hmm. But also in doing that, we've got to make sure that we can walk the talk.
Need to deliver on your promise.
Yeah, I won't digress, but I am an avid, super crazy Mini Cooper owner fanatic. I'm on my mm-hmm. number two.
Do you drive that to Disney World?
We have. Well, so a very quick story on this, and this is a prime example. My wife was looking for a new car. I had just gotten my new car, my new Mini. And she liked it. And she was talking about, well, do I get a Honda again or a Toyota? And I said, well, how about a Mini Countryman? And so we went and looked at it. And she goes, oh, I like this, but I don't like this color. So we ordered one. They found one in black and they brought it in. So we signed the papers. She's driving home. She calls me crying. The stereo stopped working. Literally 2 miles from the dealership, the stereo stopped working. Hmm. So she comes back, finds out there was something wrong. They have to replace it. She goes 2 weeks without a radio. And to this day, 3 years later, that has damaged her value of that car. She loves the car and everything else, but she won't forget that. And she pins it to me. Well, you talked me into this. This is a great car for you. So, I don't know if people will get that, but we've all faced that. And so when we talk about this conversation, this passion conversation, it does come with peril. But I do think it's like love. that if you love something, we can't help it because we really believe it's going to make a difference for somebody. So that's why we're passionate with the word of mouth that we share about the things that we love.
Mm-hmm. In the book, you talk, and again, this is the part that was a little more scientific than I was expecting. You talk about the three motivations for people to talk about businesses and causes, and they are functional, social, and emotional. And in the book, it's almost laid out like the periodic table. But can you talk about just an overview of those three, functional, social, emotional? It's really integral to the book.
Absolutely. That came from, I stumbled on a paper that was written in 2011. It was an international paper on what were the motivational triggers for word of mouth. And these scientists said we believe with researching all over the world what some triggers are. John and I took the research paper apart and we were like, wow, this is our belief model at Brains on Fire. That at the heart of almost everything that we talk about, there is a functional motivational trigger. So, Douglas, if you ask me, so why Mini Cooper? Functionally, I could say I was in a car wreck 4 years ago. My first Mini Cooper, a woman rear-ended me at 45. It has 6+ airbags. It saved my life. The engine dropped. I would have a functional conversation with you about it. I could also say it gets great gas mileage. That's a functional conversation. But then I start changing it to where I start getting emotional and I start talking about, you know, what I can say is, well, it did save my life. But also, too, I feel great driving it. I love driving that car. Mm-hmm. I love the way it takes a turn. And then there's Mini Cooper as a brand and how it signals something unique about my preference of automobile. I wave at other people that have a Mini.
Mm-hmm.
That's a social signal. And so these triggers appear to be complex, but they're rooted in what we do every day. So the interesting things, especially like with social signaling, is that we've got two of these triggers. Think of functional as kind of the middle ground. It's the nuts and bolts of what we have every day to interpret the world. But emotional and social flip on either side so that when we're face-to-face, and Douglas, when you and I have lunch and you ask me a question and I ask you a question, we are in a personal dialogue that is of a continuous conversation. So we're more prone to talk about things that are more personal and more emotional. And that's critical because we also trust that very highly. But when we're online, it's a public forum. You know, think about Twitter and Instagram and how we have to share things in a way that make us look bigger to get more attention. You know, to say, this is what's cool about me. This is this. This is that. That's why we use avatars. We do things like people used to put the Liv Armstrong band. The yellow band, that's a social signal. Mm-hmm. Your Starbucks cup is a social signal. You went to Western Carolina, so the Catamount.
Well, I went to VMI.
VMI.
VMI. That's right. I went to Western Carolina for a grad degree, but VMI. And I knew that we were going to get into the Southern Conference at some point here because you're a Furman man. But anyway, that's a topic for another discussion.
But those are classic social signals. You mm-hmm. know, the being a cadet from VMI, there's a lot of social signaling goes in. I don't, you know, if you go to the Citadel, there's a whole thing with the ring and there's iconography. So social signaling is really, really critical and important because sometimes we think of design as being after the fact when we're looking at community. But we really believe that an identity that you will socially signal and wear proudly that will say, I am a. This speaks to what I believe is critical mm-hmm. and is interesting. And brands that do that and get it, you know, they do a damn good job. So, you know, I hope I didn't make that sound too complicated, but you know, those three motivational triggers, they're around us all the time. We use it. It's just that we don't think of it that way. But if we do, I think it can help us build some interesting dynamics into our community and social media marketing.
Mm-hmm. And when reading the book and I learned about the functional, social, and emotional, there was a little bit of a head slap going on there because I was going, of course, now I see. that's how it works. So it was a little bit of the curtain being pulled back so we could kind of see how all that fits together. Let me ask you a couple other quick questions before we wrap up that I think the listeners will find interesting. How is every marketing problem a people problem in disguise?
Well, we talk about it from in the book from the aspect that, if people will say like we've got a product problem, our products aren't being used well, they're being used by people. So let's look at that. What's people's problem with the product? And so it inevitably, with the 10 plus years that we've been doing this, it gets to the point that where there's a person problem related to whatever the marketing issue is that we've got to tackle. Say it's the whole issue of family literacy. And when we started working with the National Center for Families Learning, which was actually National Center for Family Literacy at the time, their belief in how we go about tackling the literacy issue of families was to get people to just read a book. And so the book was going to be the tool. And that's fine. And maybe we could have built a program on getting people to read more books. But we asked, we asked our client to take a step back and say, what is the systematic approach to learning? You have to inspire people to wonder and to be curious. So let's start with people first. Let's inspire them to wonder out loud and have a wonder of the day. So, part of that is that if we don't think of people as being who we need to provide the solution for, we start really quickly developing tactics instead of finding ways to find something that's mutually beneficial to the brand and the person that they need. Because behind every smartphone, every iPad, every laptop, we think of this amazing technology and it's beautiful, but there's a person touching the key in the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So even with that, even with social media, we forget that it is my Instagram channel. It's not yours. I want to follow you because you've got cool stuff, food group or craft beer company or J. Crew. I love what you do, but it's still my channel. Mm-hmm. And that's still probably the purest channel out there that hasn't been taken away. But we have a tendency to really quickly get into the tactics and think about mechanisms and tools and forget about that there's a person over there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And why do they care? Why do they care? And that's the fun thing. This is why we should go out and have events and meet our customer, find out what makes them tick. Why do they like our product? Do they not like it? What? And then beyond that, the context of their product, where does that product fit into their life? So that's what we mean by that. Let's go a little bit deeper. Let's dig a deeper hole instead of a wider hole. Let's make sure that we understand how we fit into their life, then go about building, the marketing program. Let's have an understanding of the people. And that's what we mean by that. Not really anything that's super scientific other than our belief is that if we have a real understanding of where XYZ fits into a person's life, we've got a greater chance of building a marketing program that is going to include them.
Well, I thought it was one of the most powerful concepts about every marketing problem is a people problem. And I found that to be so true. It's simple to explain, probably one of the most difficult things for marketers to deal with. And on the topic of people, can you explain a bit about how sharing online is different from sharing offline?
Sure. And I'll see if I can do this correctly. From the book perspective, I think one of the really interesting things, and I don't know that we dug into it enough, is that when we're going about thinking about a marketing plan, we do need to understand today that we talk in two distinctly different channels. When we're online, it is a discontinuous channel for a conversation. You and I decide how fast and what we want to say, and we can take our time. If you ask me a really in-depth question through email or a post on a forum, it's my choice of when I answer that. I have time to think about what I want to say. I can decide how smart I want to be, how nasty I want to be, how positive, whatever it may be. But when we're face to face, and I was mentioning earlier, we're in this continuous conversation mode. If we're at lunch and you ask me a question, I said, Douglas, I'm going to wait till the end of lunch to answer that question. You know, that might happen in some instances, but that spontaneity of face to face, it's not going to be very fun for you. And so those channels are very, very different. And so, you know, we need to understand that we've got this continuous conversation mode, which is on the phone and face-to-face. And basically every form of electronic, our email, our texting, whatever we do through social media, those are all discontinuous. So we have a tendency to craft it to make us look smarter and in a better light than when it comes to that face-to-face reality. It's spontaneous, and we see reality. You know, it's just easier to see. Yeah. Now, I don't know if that answers your question, but I went into the technical aspect of it. But that's at the heart of where those channels are so different.
Yeah, and I think so. When it's offline, it's a little more emotional, and when we're online, it's a little bit more broadcasting.
Social.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that ties back to why word of mouth is so powerful, because you've got that emotional element and it's authentic. It's sincere. It's just harder to capture it in a bottle.
It is. And I won't lie that, you know, internally, some of our quotes that I think we get tired of saying, but they're really, really true, that we start every project with, we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And we go out, you know, I kind of like to think of myself as a cross between Yoda and Indiana Jones, mm-hmm. that I'm trying to find a way for our clients, and what I would love to evangelize to the folks on the podcast is to be generous with your knowledge. Mm-hmm. And also wear the hat of Indiana Jones to be an explorer, to not be the expert. You know, that's the beautiful thing of Yoda. Yoda, when he, you know, Luke Skywalker was the hero. Your customers, they're the hero. So how do we get them there? So how do we do that? And so, as you said, this isn't something you can quickly put lightning in a bottle. And I think that's the challenge of community and word of mouth marketing, is it's a dirty job. You've got to dig in, and you're dealing with people, and people are messy. And they just are. But that's beautiful, because if you do it that way, it helps become a mirror for your culture. And I think, as I look back, if I retired or stopped doing something tomorrow, the thing that would do my heart the most good, and probably the things that we would look at as being the most successful, is how going out and digging up people that were evangelists for a brand and organization helped to change the culture of that organization or brand. And that's a beautiful thing. And we always used to say from our first book is that if you got a bunch of people from your company together with a bunch of your customers, would they have something to talk about? Would it be a party? Would they like each other? And I happen to think that's critical. Right now, I'm working with two brands that we're building communities for in the future, and we've been on the road with them, with their customers, and they love each other. there's a spirit and a soul there that's exciting. Now, does that guarantee success? No, but they get it. They get that there's something there with bringing the everyday folk up to an empowerment pedestal to talk about why they love that brand and how it fits into their life. And it's genuine. It's not brand driven. I do think you need to do that too. Sometimes you need to reach out to an influencer or a end quote ambassador to help ignite and fuel a community. You have to look at all kinds of different ways to do that. But at the end, we've got to have a plan to lift people up. If we want to build a community, not everyone can stay in the passive stages of they just like our posts. That's not going to get you where you need to go with the ROI that most brands and organizations need. They're going to have a way to lift people up to feel like they are owners of the conversation as much as the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got preachy. Sorry.
You know, that's fine. That's fine. Gino, first let me apologize to the listener. I forgot to start the stopwatch at the beginning of the interview, so we may have gone a little bit long, but time kind of stood still for me anyway. How can listeners find out more about you and your book?
Well, they can go to brainsonfire.com. We have a blog. I am not a good blogger. I plan on trying to do that more often. But if you want to see a little bit of the world, I do take photos when I'm out on the road doing insight and stuff. So if you search for me, Gino Church, on Instagram and Twitter, there. And so that's a little bit of the inside of the kimono. But our blog is a wonderful place to check in on us and see what we're doing. We're pretty transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I would start.
Well, and we'll include links to all that at marketingbookpodcast.com. The name of the book is The Passion Conversation, Understanding, Sparking, and Sustaining Word-of-Mouth Marketing. Our guest has been Gino Church. Gino, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, Douglas.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the entrepreneur, author, and motivational speaker Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."